flurries of fun await this winter in Indiana. Feel the rush of the Midwest's only refrigerated toboggan run. Ski down snow-covered slopes and marvel at frozen waterfalls on a winter hike. When it's time to unwind, from outdoor fun to indoor escapes, your perfect winter getaway starts in Indiana. Plan your trip today at inindiana.com/winter.
Yeah, sure thing.
Hey, you sold that car yet?
Yeah, sold it to Carvana.
Oh, I thought you were selling to that guy.
The guy who wanted to pay me in foreign currency, no interest, over 36 months? Yeah, no. Carvana gave me an offer in minutes, picked it up, and paid me on the spot. It was so convenient.
Just like that?
Yeah.
No hassle?
None.
That is super convenient.
Sell your car to Carvana and swap hassle for convenience. Pickup fees may apply.
Hey, I'm Ben Stiller.
I'm Adam Scott.
And we make a TV show called Severance. On January 17th, Severance is back for season 2 on Apple TV+, and we can't wait for you guys to see it.
And before the premiere, Ben and I are going to be binging season 1 and putting out daily recap podcasts.
Yep. Each weekday beginning January 7th, we'll be dropping an episode featuring exclusive behind-the-scenes tidbits and brilliant insights from our cast and crew and us.
Patricia Arquette, Britt Lauer, Zach Cherry, John Turturro, the list goes on.
All your favorite Lumen employees, their friends, families, enemies, in your feed every single weekday.
And here's the best part. After that, we're going to keep going. Tune in weekly as we recap every episode of season 2. The podcast drops on the same day the episode comes out.
It's the Severance Podcast with Ben and Adam.
On Apple Podcasts, the Odyssey app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Now, the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
It's 12:03. You made it to Friday afternoon, and you made it through January. Today is the final day of the month, January 31st. Good afternoon. Thanks for joining us in the Noon Business Hour, rather wet afternoon. I'm Rob Hart. More people are going into debt to finance their vacations. We'll cover that in our next segment. But right now, a measure of inflation favored by the Federal Reserve is out today. We're joined by Andrew Bush, former Chief Markets Intelligence Officer at the Commodity Futures Trading Commission and economic futurist at andrewbush.com, based in Charlotte, North Carolina. Andy, thank you for joining us today. The latest key inflation measure, and this is the one the Fed likes to look at, shows core inflation at 2.8%. That's in line with expectations. But the word of the day, Andy, appears to be sticky when it comes to inflation.
Yeah, we're not near. Let me put this in context. I mean, CPI was at 9% a little while ago. Now it's fallen significantly. Core PCE, which is what the Fed prefers to use, strips out energy. And I think what's interesting about this is that it's not getting any closer to the 2% target that the Fed wants to get to. We're bouncing away from that. It's up to 2.8% over the last month. So it looks like the Fed knew what it was doing when it said, you know what, we really don't need to be cutting rates at this point because we're really not meeting our inflation target.
Now, is this also in line with predictions that have been made here on this program and elsewhere that that last mile in getting to that 2% target is going to be the toughest one to traverse?
Exactly. I mean, we've done the easy work. I mean, a lot of the supply chain issues that were driving durable goods up and other products up, you know, that's all washed out right now. Where this has moved into is obviously in services, obviously in wages, talent. There's just a lot of areas where inflation is still pretty robust, including the housing market. And that's problematic. Even though the Fed's kept rates up, even though we've seen some of the mortgage applications drop significantly, housing prices have not come down very much.
Outside of the Fed just keeping interest rates elevated in order to slow the economy down, or the economy tumbling into recession for one reason or another, what are some ways from an economic policy standpoint that could address some of the elevated prices that we're dealing with? Because I read a lot of housing people on social media and elsewhere, and they say one way to really address the housing crunch and the elevated cost of housing that is driving inflation is just to build more in more places.
It's denser, right? Denser, more, you know, four buildings that have four, you know, apartments to them instead of just one. So this is the problem with NIMBY. Nobody wants to have denser apartments where they live or nearby where they live. And that's, you know, the local zoning laws are really what's driving the problem in housing overall across the country. And there's, at the federal level, there's not much you can do about that. And so it's a local issue to some extent. And until people decide, like, hey, if we don't build enough, we don't get enough apartments or multifamily homes in here, we're not going to have the workers that we need to drive our business growth or have the people be able to work in the restaurants that we want to or the supermarkets or wherever. So it's really such an interesting dynamic because this is totally a local level issue that the federal government can do very little about.
Andrew Bush, former Chief Markets Intelligence Officer at the Commodity Futures Trading Commission and economic futurist at andrewbush.com in Charlotte, North Carolina. Thank you for joining us today. Coming up, how the just a vacation can lead you down a rough financial road. We'll talk about that next.
A deposit for your future. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
Many people are deciding to take a trip by using their credit card to pay for it. Let's discuss the pitfalls with Sherry Greco-Rikus, co-founder of Rappaport-Rikus Capital Management in Chicago, author of the book Maximize Your Return on Life. Sherry, thank you for joining us today. And we will learn a new word today, Sherry, and that is just a vacation. You can't afford it, or you would put yourself in debt to go on this vacation, but you manage to talk yourself into it anyway, hence just a vacation. And the memories may last a lifetime, but Sherry, so does the financial hangover, potentially.
Yes, and you mentioned just a few moments ago that a lot of people are going on debt to go on vacation. There was an actual survey done by Alliance Partners that said 47% of people couldn't afford to go on vacation. But guess what? 49% actually went on vacation. And what they end up doing is using their credit card, which, if you've heard me before on this news program, that is a big no-no. I mean, credit card debt, you could be paying in excess of 20%. It's hard to get rid of it. And you really, if you want to do these vacations, enjoy it, have peace of mind when you're there, you need to budget ahead of time for these vacations.
Yeah, I was going to say the message of this segment should not be you should just you crawl into a hole and wear sackcloth until your financial situation has improved. But you can set a budget, you can save, and maybe lower your expectations a little bit. I mean, what is an example of a just a vacation where somebody blows out a credit card in order to travel?
You know, sometimes people are lured by miles. So all of a sudden they have miles and they're like, well, I'm going to get the plane for free. But that's a small part of the vacation. You know, you've got your food, your hotel, your entertainment. And before you're done, it's boom, boom, credit card. And that's going up. And the whole joy of the vacation, it's almost like a buzzkill. You come home and you've got this debt. So like you said, enjoy your vacation, go on it, but plan for it. And maybe you don't need to go to Fiji. I've done this with my family, staycation. There's museums that are actually for free in Chicago. You could maybe get a hotel room for two nights downtown, have a few nice meals, but not to have the expense to go to Hawaii or someone exotic. You know, maybe a road trip. We don't live that far from Wisconsin, Indiana. You can go hiking. There's some ski places you can go. And there's a lot of good deals out there on vacations. You just need to look at them, especially if you go off season. So, you know, this is a great time. We're in January. We're about to become February. But set a budget. Maybe put a little bit away every month. You can set up a separate bank account or just allocate it. If you have a spouse or a family member, everyone is in on it, even the kids. A little skin in the game. But budget for the vacation. Take it and enjoy it.
And I know social media drives some of this to an extent, because if somebody else is going to a destination that includes sun and fun and many Instagrammable moments, you want to go there too. You don't want to, you know, there's a little bit of envy involved. But we're kind of doing things the way our parents did it. I mean, there's all sorts of false nostalgia on social media for the way things used to be, and the way things used to be include included, saving up for that vacation. That's what mom and dad did back in the day.
Yeah, and I mean, if you ask my kids, they never wanted to do it, but some of our best vacations were driving trips, you know, seeing Americana, stopping in sites along the way, staying in hotels that maybe weren't 4-star, but we had all those long talks in the car and, just time as a family. And maybe you just take a long weekend, go to New York, see a couple plays, but it doesn't have the impact. But as I have said all the time on the show, that to have financial peace, financial happiness is living within your means. And if you do that, you're going to feel much better and you're going to actually enjoy the vacation. And it's a priority. Would you rather have a vacation? Would you rather, you know, maybe go to some plays in town? Maybe, you know, you need a new car. You know, as my dad always said, you can have anything you want, not everything. Pick what's most important. Look at your values. See what you're going to really enjoy. But any of those purchases, make sure it fits within your budget and you're living within your means.
Yeah, memories are memories, and it really doesn't matter what kind of price tag is attached to them. Sherry Greco-Rikus, co-founder of Rappaport Rikus Capital Management in Chicago, author of the book Maximize Your Return on Life. Thank you for joining us today. Coming up next, how the internet has hurt and helped bookstores.
The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
The demise of the physical bookstore has been thrown a curve by the social media community. Book Talk, we welcome in Stephanie Kitchen, owner of City Lit Books at Kedzie and Logan Boulevard in Chicago's Logan Square neighborhood. Stephanie, thank you for joining us today. And tell us a little bit more about Book Talk, the TikTok-related book and literature community, and how that is helping the physical bookstore thrive in 2025.
Yeah, sure. Thanks for having me. I think it's been around really since, I think it really blew up during the pandemic in 2020, but it's been going strong ever since, really driving people back into physical stores. People love to explore online what's trending, and then they come in and ask, and we've seen lots of customers ask for things that have been out for a few years even, so that's kind of cool to see. All different kinds of genres, but it's really affecting, I think, romance, horror, and mystery. Those genres are really seeing the most like explosion from Book Talk.
It seems like fiction is the big beneficiary from Book Talk. More so than like nonfiction or current events related books.
Well, we have seen that a little bit too, especially with the current. What's going on in the current political arena. On Tyranny has been a big bestseller for us. It's been out for a few years by Timothy Snyder. So, yeah, it does reach nonfiction, but it's usually fiction related. Yeah.
Now, I would imagine that for a lot of people who want to pick up a physical book, and I've turned into a big library guy in the last couple of years since COVID-19, sure. Is that, people will say, I have the Kindle app on my phone. I have an e-reader on my phone, but I'm reading this physical book so I can get away from my phone, because the book, whether I get it from the library or get it from your store or just find it in a basement somewhere, the book is not going to text me. The book is not going to send me any notifications about what may be going on in the world. I can just lose myself in this physical book, and it sounds like people are discovering the joys of losing yourself in a good book.
Yeah, I think, we're so attached to our phones, and with the constant news cycle, I think people are really looking for an escape, and books have always been there, to fulfill that need. And they're not going away. The physical print material is not going away.
And then how are you capitalizing on that? I mean, because it used to be, if you go into a bookstore, like this was an Oprah's Book Club selection, for those of you who remember Oprah's Book Club. So are there kind of Book Talk sections in your store or other stores to let people know that they're part of the community?
I mean, I've seen it in other stores. We've had displays in the past, featured on Book Talk, but Book Talk is such a huge thing. I mean, no matter what you're interested in, what you like to read, there's something for you out there. But what I've seen more is people coming in and asking for specific books that they've seen, and then they just go on to discover other things, or they come and ask hey, I really like this book, and can you recommend something similar? I mean, that's really what we're here for. And the other thing really driving book talk or people coming in the store is the aesthetic of these books. I mean, they've started printing them, you know, with fancy stained edges and special editions. And I think there's that customer has been coming in too, looking for the pretty books that they see online that people post about. So,
and also, cool. Also, you can't beat the smell, can you?
No, definitely not.
Stephanie Kitchen, owner of City Lit Books at Kedzie and Logan Boulevard in Logan Square. Thank you for joining us today.
The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
Good afternoon. I'm Rob Hart. These are the top stories on News Radio WBBM. The grim recovery operation continues following this week's deadly air disaster near Reagan National Airport in Washington, D.C. The head of Chicago Public Schools comments on a case of mistaken identity involving federal agents at a CPS school 1 week ago. Entrepreneur Friday carrying on a family pizza legacy that dates back to Chicago in the 60s, and Google is looking for tenants to fill space at the revamped Thompson Center. In the loop, business, the markets are mixed. The Dow is down 169 points. The NASDAQ is up 135. And the S&P 500 is up 13, 39 degrees right now in Chicago with light rain. It's 1231, topping our news at the half hour. Crews in Washington, D.C. are back at work in rough conditions today in their effort to complete a heartbreaking task.
More than 40 bodies have now been recovered after America's deadliest aviation disaster in nearly a quarter century. Police boats are back on the Potomac River, working in a chilly rain and looking for the rest of the 67 people killed in Wednesday's collision between a commercial plane and a military helicopter, which apparently flew into the jet's path. While federal investigators say they will not speculate, President Trump is. Posting on social media this morning, the helicopter was flying far above a 200-foot limit. Pentagon Chief Pete Hegseth tells Fox and Friends somebody was at the wrong altitude, and the investigation will provide answers.
It's completely unacceptable.
Sagar Magani at the White House.
Chicago Public School CEO Pedro Martinez says he's proud of how employees handled what they mistakenly thought were immigration agents at a Southside elementary school last week. They did not get into the building.
Our school response demonstrates that our system, in partnership with our community organizations and labor partners, is prepared and ready to keep our students and staff safe.
The group attempting to enter the school turned out to be Secret Service agents investigating a threat against an individual, which had been posted on social media. It's 12:32 as the Noon Business Hour continues. The markets are mixed this afternoon. Joining us on it to discuss today's market activity is Ryan Dietrich, Chief Market Strategist at the Carson Group in Omaha, Nebraska. Ryan, thank you for joining us today. And this is shaping up to be a winning January, so a strong start to the year.
Yeah, thanks for having me back, and happy Friday, everybody. You know, think about Monday, we came in, futures crashing, all the worry about AI. Now here we are, looking at a pretty solid week, and just a chip shot away on the S&P from new all-time highs. But for the year, we're looking at over 3% gains the first month of January here, which is nice because remember December was a little bit of a hiccup there because the Fed came off a little more hawkish. But just to keep this simple, there's something called the January barometer, Rob. So goes January, goes the year. I looked, and years that are up at least 3% in January, the full year is up like 21% on average, higher 92% of the time. I mean, so yeah, a lot of that's because you had a good first month, but momentum really tends to stick, and that's just one piece. But for investors out there, hey, you know what? Let's be grateful. We've got a good January, and that tends to suggest you might have a strong year.
And then what does, however, you know, there was that big sell-off related to the unveiling of DeepSeek, and really without a whole lot of due diligence as to how the tech works, and if the tech is actually built on a solid foundation or a borrowed foundation.
Yeah.
What does it say, though, that the market would sell off so quickly on news that, you know, in my estimation, seemed kind of half-baked?
Yeah, a little overreaction. I mean, that's how markets go. I mean, let's not forget last August, right? The yen carry trade unwind. We had the issues of July 18th or 19th with CrowdStrike with the airplanes. We saw a big tech sell-off then. I mean, we're going to have these 1 and 2 day blips that happen. And investors, good to know, start of the year, it's just what tends to happen. But here's the crazy thing about Monday. So tech was down 5%, NASDAQ down 3%. It was a bloodbath if you were in that area. Banks closed on Monday at an all-time high. The transportation average closed at an all-time high. There were 350 stocks in the S&P 500 up that day, 22 in the Dow. That's out of 30. So what I'm getting at is, yeah, the large cap tech got really hammered. But that's why at Carson Group, we say keep a diversified portfolio. Don't just chase the shiny object. You clearly should have some tech exposure because that's where the earnings are coming from. But let's just not go all in. There's some other groups that are doing really well, and no one noticed it on Monday, but we did, and that's what was happening under the surface.
Earnings, all the tech biggies posting this week. What is your estimation of earnings season so far?
Yeah, I mean, listen, solid. You know, the last couple of weeks, we're looking at multiple 2% gains in a row on the S&P, so clearly the market, quote-unquote, likes the earnings. But again, just because tech was so in the spotlight, you know, what do you think about AI? What do you think of the technology? What do you think about the future? Have you wasted, quote-unquote, spending so much money in AI when there's this cheaper version potentially coming out of China? We'll cross that bridge when we get there. The reality, again, is demand is still strong. The consumer is still strong. We had GDP numbers, I guess it would have been yesterday, that maybe were a tad weaker than you wanted, but then you peel back that onion. It's because investments were slow. The consumer remains strong. And then today we had some inflation data from the PCE, just all these different measures of inflation. Just know this, all the listeners, inflation continues to improve. So you got inflation improving, a still strong economy, a still strong labor market, and earnings are literally hitting all-time highs for the S&P 500. That's why we're close to all-time highs and why we think we're going to have more coming this year.
Ryan Dietrich, Chief Market Strategist at the Carson Group in Omaha, thank you for joining us today. Coming up next in Entrepreneur Friday, a Chicago pizzeria sharing its affection for dogs.
The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
It's Entrepreneur Friday, and Chicago is a pizza town. The competition is fierce. Let's discuss what it takes to thrive in that tough environment with Brian Tondrick, founder and owner of Bartoli's Pizzeria, locations in Chicago's Roscoe Village and Westtown neighborhoods. Brian, thank you for joining us today on Entrepreneur Friday. Now, you personally have been in the pizza business since the Roscoe Village location opened in 2013, but the namesake of your pizza was the person behind one of this city's legendary pizza names.
Hey, Rob. Thanks. Yeah. We named the pizzeria after my grandfather, Fred Bartoli. And some people know who he is in the city. He started Gino's East Pizza in 1966. And so that's how I got the inspiration to open up Bartoli's.
Now, the Gino's East, he sold Gino's East in the 80s. And then even after cashing out of that name, did your family just kind of stay around the pizza business? I mean, what brought you into it?
Yeah, actually, no. My mom was she had her own business at the time when he retired, and my grandfather and his partners sold the business. And my uncle also had his own business, so they didn't want to carry on with the pizza. I was a little bit too young at the time. I was in high school, I think I was in eighth grade at the time. And you know, at that point in my life, I couldn't run a pizzeria. So it was years later when I decided we had the inspiration, and it was always in my blood, and I always wanted to do it. So 2013 came around, and it was the right opportunity to do it, and I opened up the Bartoli's on Addison and Damon.
There is every just flavor, type, shape, size, topping of pizza available to you in Chicago. So when you enter into this marketplace, and even though it's hereditary for you, Brian, how do you decide? How do you decide to make your place unique? I mean, is it a back to basics sort of thing? Is it just in the design? Is it in the location? How do you really make a name for yourself in a very crowded marketplace?
Yeah, definitely. And you have to stand out in the city because we have so many great pizzerias. I would say the one thing we do is we do Chicago style pizza. So we do both a very good deep dish pizza. It's inspired by Gino's. It's definitely a little bit different recipe than what they sell. We've got a lot of great accolades on that. And we also knew that Chicago is also a thin crust town, and we had to have a great thin crust pizza. So we developed a really good cracker crust traditional Chicago thin crust pizza. Everybody's calling it tavern style these days. When we opened, it was still, everybody was calling it thin crust. So we are, you know, if you've ever been to our restaurant, it's very Chicago oriented. We have a lot of great old Chicago memorabilia, all the old companies that were around back in the turn of the century, manufacturers and all the things that were produced in Chicago. So we wanted to keep it true to Chicago history, you know, to Chicago style.
Now, you have a second location in Westtown. It opened just before the COVID-19 pandemic, and that one is unique because it feeds both man and beast.
It does. When we opened up, we actually opened up a week before the shutdown hit with COVID in 2019. And we put in a window. We put in a walk-up window. And it was, the idea was there were people that didn't want to come into the restaurant. They could pick up their food through the window. Well, it worked for a while. And then we started getting all our friendly, you know, we're dog people. So we always had a dog bowl outside. And all the neighbors in the neighborhood would walk their dogs. And we'd start handing them treats. And it kind of became the dog window. And all of a sudden, it just took off. And we've had some TikTok videos that were posted by one of my managers, and they went viral, having millions of hits. So now we have, you know, so many dogs walking through looking for the treats every day. It's crazy.
Brian Tondrick, founder and owner of Bartoli's Pizzeria, locations in Roscoe Village and in Westtown. Thank you for joining us today on Entrepreneur Friday. And still to come, there's some available space at the Madeover Thompson Center, currently getting its glow up in downtown Chicago. We'll talk about that next.
Investing 60 minutes each weekday for planning for the future. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
Google is still looking for tenants to fill office space in its new Chicago home at the Thompson Center. Let's get the latest now from Danny Ecker, reporter, Crane Chicago Business. Danny, thank you for joining us today. And I walk past the Thompson Center every day on my walk into the radio station from the train, and it's now a skeleton. The building for the year 2000, as they called it when it opened nearly 40 years ago, is just a bare skeleton in the elements, in the loop. But one day, it'll be a vision to the future, Danny, and a lot of companies that want to be in proximity to Google, it may make good business sense to sign a lease there.
Yeah, it's right now. Yeah, it's like the world's biggest jungle gym at the moment. But you know, it's a very it's an interesting thing. We knew Google would be taking a bunch of space in the building. Of course, they're going to be buying it when the renovation is done. But we didn't really know how much space they'd be taking and how much space they might look to offload to other users. And it's become clear they're searching for about 400,000 square feet of tenants. That's, you know, maybe somewhere between maybe a third, a little over a third of the rentable space in the building there. So, you know, it's going to be interesting. It's a lot of new space that's really kind of coming to the market as available at a time when we already have record high vacancy. So maybe not the best news for other landlords also hunting for tenants, but certainly it'll be interesting to see who takes this space, who wants to be near Google and back in the center of the loop.
Google is, they've already leased floors 3 through 9 in the soon-to-be brand new and improved Thompson Center. Will they still call it the Thompson Center when it's all said and done? I mean, I would imagine that Governor James Thompson may have less cachet, as it were, with the tech industry than when it was a state office building.
Yeah, no idea, but certainly I think people will start, once they're there, referring to it as, you know, the Google building or something like that, because it will be very, it'll have an entirely different look to it, you know, with more people getting in there. And it sounds like they're still going to have the atrium being publicly accessible during business hours. So people will get used to it in its new skin. And, you know, just again, it'll be, this is such an impactful project for the loop as it tries to continue to recover from the fallout from the pandemic. And, you know, it'll be a big deal when you have Googlers going in there regularly, and hopefully that'll help boost the retail and other office buildings. A lot of them are in distress around there in that LaSalle Street corridor.
And they're still looking for tenants for floors 10 through 16. And the floor plans of the eventual finished product, are they going to be similar to what the state of Illinois office, what their footprint was like when it was still a state office building?
It seems that way. I mean, they're keeping the atrium that cuts the big hole right through the middle of the building, you know, and gives it its really dynamic look. But yeah, that's going to be, I think, one of the challenges that Google has as they look for users is how many people want this sort of U-shaped floor plate that is in the building is that, you know, maybe not as is as efficient as some other buildings you might find out there. But when they're redoing it to be brand new, and certainly if you have Google as your landlord, that they would be making sure the building is kept up. There's a lot of compelling options to being in that space. But it's going to be a little different from a lot of the other office offerings out there.
Danny Ecker, reporter, Crane Chicago Business, giving us the latest on the Google transformation of the Thompson Center. Thank you for joining us today.